platoon attention. Huh! Rate hate for work. Huh! It's time once more to speak your mind.
It's time once more to speak your mind.
On in your show will all unwind.
On in your show will all unwind.
Sound off.
One, two.
Sound again.
Three, four.
Bring it on down.
One, two, three, four. One, two. Three, four!
He'll nail Roy Patton, ACLU.
He'll nail Roy Patton, ACLU.
Pro-abortion, homos, too.
Pro-abortion, homos, too.
Talk to Bob on the number one show.
Talk to Bob on the number one show.
761-1550.
761-1550.
Sound off.
One, two.
Sound again.
Three, four.
Bring it on down.
One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four!
You're right. You're right. You're right, right, right. You're right, you're right, you're right, right, right. You're right, you're right.
You're right, right, right. No lefts there, huh? Would you get that out of the archives? You guys are funny. But the phone number's not right, 800-8-NYARD. All right, so we'll, what do? We open with the actual, with the real open? The real live, Bob and your live open? All right, we can do that. That was good. You guys did a good job digging that out.
One morning, there's truth of the head.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing, religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, well, you know what? I've got a guest I'm going to be debating in just a few minutes. So I'll hold off on our phone number to give him as much airtime as we can get. And first, I want to read a short email. 2 days ago, we did an interview with astrophysicist Stephen Hawking. He's back in the news today, isn't he? What is he saying today? This is too much. We did an interview with him, and I got an email from Peter J. Sterling. And he writes this, subject Stephen Hawking, rude? Of course Pastor Bob was rude. How would he feel if someone did that to him? Make you wait on hold so some pompous radio personality could take your statements out of context and misrepresent you. Now, wait a minute, Peter, how could I have been rude? This Stephen Hawking, he says that the entire human race is insignificant. And if so, surely he is insignificant. And how could you possibly be rude to something that is insignificant? And if you're saying that I took his statements out of context or misrepresented him, it would be good to give an example. Examples are great learning tools. They help to substantiate your point. So what did I take out of context, and in what way did I misrepresent him? Stephen Hawking said, to avoid global warming, perhaps we should go to the moon. And I pointed out it's 200 degrees there. And so to avoid a 1 degree increase in temperature here in the last 50 years, he wants to shoot you off to the moon. Or maybe Mars, where it's frigid all the time. Anyway, Peter J. Sterling said I was rude, really rude, to Stephen Hawking, and I just don't understand why. I wish he would have given an example why. Okay, tomorrow, Bill Clinton will be in Denver, Colorado, and for those interested, we're going to the convention center, the Colorado Convention Center, downtown Denver, at 10:30. And we're going to have huge signs. In fact, you could help us hold one. They're going to say, Clinton rapist. And then we'll have hundreds of our trademark yellow flyers with the evidence all assembled in this one flyer that Bill Clinton, in fact, we quote the Wall Street Journal on the cover, right next to his picture from the Oval Office, where they wrote that Clinton, in fact, raped Juanita Broderick. They said, in fact, that he raped her. They didn't say alleged. They said, in fact, when you look at the evidence. And the evidence is overwhelming. So also tomorrow night, he'll be at a fundraiser for a Democrat from New Jersey. And this will be at the private home of Tom Strickland, former politician. And that home address, of course, is private, but we have it. And so come on out tomorrow at 10:30 in the morning, about 10:30 to noon, at the Colorado Convention Center, and we'll meet at the Blue Bear. No, that's not a bar. It's a Blue Bear in front of the convention center. We'll meet at the Blue Bear, and we'll have a great time of fellowship. We'll hand out these flyers, hold these signs, and then tomorrow night we'll go to the very high-class Clinton fundraiser at a private residence in Denver. So we'll be doing all those things. Let us know if you'd like to be involved. Now, I would like to go back to a guest we had a few weeks ago, and it was an interesting show we did with an atheist. He's a medical doctor. He had a career with the military, and his name is Dr. John Henderson. Dr. Henderson, welcome back to Bob and Yurt Live.
Oh, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, it's good to have you back, Doc. And here's what we did after the debate. I think I mentioned that I'd like to send you our Battle Royale 7, where I debated Zakif, who is an atheist at theologyonline.com. And also our DVD called Get Out of the Matrix, where I got to debate a college philosophy class, and their teacher was in the room. So did you get to see that video?
I sure did. It was very interesting.
All right. Well, I thought maybe we could start talking through some of the issues in that video. And, of course, they overlap with our Battle Royale 7 debate on Does God Exist?
Yes.
So here's how I'd like to begin. In the video, I asked the students a number of questions or things that they would claim to believe, cliches that I would call atheist cliches. In fact, I have seven of those in front of me, and one of those is one that I asked you when we debated last time. And I asked you a question, and you answered it, and I want to see if you remember. I asked you, Dr. Henderson, as an atheist, would you agree with the statement that you could only know that which your five senses tell you? Do you recall how you answered that?
I probably answered it, that's correct. That's the only way we can get information into the brain.
Okay, so you could only know that which your five senses tell you.
Well, in reality, there's a sixth sense, but most people don't know about it, and that's called a sense of proprioception. And that's the feeling and sense that you know where your arms and legs are in position to your body and in position to gravity. But that has been, in some groups, that's called a part of the sense of feeling. But in general, as Aristotle's five senses are what most of us know about and believe.
Okay. And so when I asked you that question, you answered, yes, you can only know that which your five senses tell you.
Right.
You've since seen the video. Our video, Get Out of the Matrix, where I address this. I gave you a follow-up question. If you could only know that which your five senses tell you, which of your five senses tell you that?
Well, your five senses go into the brain.
Yeah.
And the brain then does various things with those stimuli.
I'll give you an example. If you bite into a banana, then your brain tells you, this tastes pretty good, take another bite.
Right.
And you take another bite.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if you put your hand into a fire, your brain tells you that hurts. And so we could tell that the sense of taste and the sense of touch are connected to our brains, and our brains will take that input and help us determine what to do with based on the input. But when atheists say that you can only know what your five senses tell you, that is a piece of knowledge right there, that little rule, that little observation. You could only know that which your five senses tell you. So my question to you is, which of your five senses tell you that rule?
I don't even understand the question.
Well, this is dangerous then, Dr. Henderson. You know why it's dangerous?
No.
Because you are reasoning that there is no God.
Right.
And you're reasoning... You get stuck on this simple little question. And you're putting quite a bit at stake on your reason against the Creator God.
Well, I'm really not putting nothing at stake because a God like the Jewish, Christian, Muslim God does not exist.
Well,
I don't have the fear of everlasting hell that you do.
Dr. Henderson, that's the end result of your reasoning. You've concluded that.
Right.
And what we're trying to do now is demonstrate whether or not you should trust your reasoning to that extent. So let me say it again. You believe, as with countless atheists, that you can only know that which your five senses tell you. And that in and of itself is a piece of knowledge. It's a claim. It's an observation. And so I would suggest to you that your sense of taste cannot tell you that piece of truth, if it is true, that you can only know that which your five senses tell you. You could write that on a piece of paper and chew up that paper. You could lick the ink. And nothing with your sense of taste will tell you whether that's valid or a false observation. So then you could also listen to it. As you write those words on a piece of paper, you could listen with a microphone. You could listen to the pen on the paper. That's not going to tell you whether what's being written is true or not. You could smell it. You could smell the ink and the combination of the smell it makes with the paper. That's not going to tell you whether it's true or not. You could look at words with your eyes. You could look at the words with your eyes, and different words make different patterns. But those patterns are not going to be able to tell you whether those words are indicating a true statement or a false statement. And you could hear words pronounced. You could pronounce a sentence forward, backward. You could mix letters together. And the sound of the words are not going to tell you whether they're true or not. And you could run your finger across the page and you could touch the words. And even if it's embossed on a sheet of paper, like on a business card, to where the letters are raised up, you are not going to be able to tell whether that statement is true or false using any of your five senses.
But the brain, my brain, allows me to be reasonable and logical. And the concept of a Jewish, Christian, Muslim God who is all-powerful and all-knowing, my brain tells me that is neither reasonable nor logical.
Okay, and I understand.
Now, if you want to define God in a different way, I will not argue with you. If you want to define God as love, or you want to define God as a creator, or you want to define God as first cause, or you want to define God as energy, then I really have no argument with that.
But
if you want to define God in terms of masculine terms, that he is all-knowing and all-powerful, and perfect, then my logic and reasoning, which comes out of my brain, tells me that that can't possibly be true.
Okay, Dr. Henderson, I realize that's the conclusion, that's the end result of a long chain of reasoning that you've done throughout your life.
Right.
And what I'm doing is challenging
my reasoning.
Your reasoning itself. I know what your conclusion is. That's why this is the second time we've had you on the show. But here's what I need you to do. I need you, and it will take a bit of a courage, I think. I need you to reconsider the statement that you can only know what your five senses tell you.
Yes.
And I need you to acknowledge that none of your five senses can tell you that. None of them can.
No, I can't acknowledge that.
Okay, then let me ask you my first question. Which of your five senses tell you that?
All of them. All of my five senses that go into my computer, the brain, tell me that such a God as you believe in cannot exist.
That's not my question. That's not my question. You're jumping to the conclusion. I'm talking about this observation that atheists make, that you can only know what your five senses tell you. If you have the ability, I'd like us to focus on that.
Well, I don't think there's anything to focus on.
Oh, sure there is. There's your five senses.
And you
and
want
there's your fundamental epistemology, your understanding of knowledge and where knowledge comes from. And you have been convinced that somehow your sense of smell may be combined with your sense of taste and touch, maybe. I don't know.
And that, feeling and everything else.
Okay, that they can tell you that this observation is whether it's true or false. So I'm asking you again, which of your five senses, or tell me which ones in combination, tell you that you could only know that which your five senses tell you?
Well, that's a function of the brain. And the brain is capable of reasoning and logic.
Okay, now and which of the five senses?
All of them.
Which of the five senses give you the laws of logic and the laws of reason?
All of them. That's what the function of the brain is. It takes everything that you see and you feel and hear in your environment, and it computes it, and you come out with what seems to be reasonable and logical. You have done the same. Actually, you haven't done a very good job of running through your brain, because you were taught at an early age that such a God exists, and you have never thought it out, or you have been afraid to question even your own beliefs.
All right, Dr. Henderson, I would like you to reconsider that the laws of logic, for example, something cannot be true and not true at the same time and in the same way.
I agree with that.
That does not come from the sense of smell. Would you agree?
Yes, it doesn't come from smell.
In other words, your sense of smell cannot tell you the fundamental laws of logic.
Well,
they might tell you that something stinketh, and you might not like the way something smells, but your sense of smell doesn't give rise to reason and logic. It gives rise to stink and to things that smell nice.
No, you're right. The reason and logic comes out of the function of the brain.
Right, which is your brain is not one of your five senses. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that.
Okay, so your brain is actually where you evaluate precepts and observations and claims. Your brain is what you use to really derive at truth.
That's exactly right.
Right. If someone says you can only know that what your five senses tell you, actually you've just said to the audience, you've agreed that really it's your brain that helps you understand what is true and what is not true.
Well, that's true, but your brain only can react to things that you can see that your five senses.
How about your imagination?
It's a function of the brain.
Right. You could imagine things you've never seen, you've never touched, you've never tasted. People imagine that time is actually going backwards. They've never felt that. They've never smelt it. They've never seen it. But we can imagine things because the foundation of who we are doesn't reside in our nerve impulses. It's not our smell, touch, taste, hearing, or sight. It really is in who we are fundamentally. And so you've agreed, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but you've now agreed that, in fact, your brain plays the greater role in what you can know than do your five senses.
I think it plays the entire role.
Yeah, so when you say, so over a period of a couple months when you've been asked on the air, is it true that you can only know that which your five senses tell you, you've now refuted that. And
no,
you've
said,
your brain is actually how you really know things.
Well, and you're twisting the words, because they're certainly true. Your brain is how you know things, but your brain can only respond to the five senses stimuli that comes into the body.
I just gave you one example. There's infinite examples, but one example is that people imagine that time is going backwards, or they imagine time travel, and there are no stimuli coming into us that indicates that time is going backwards.
You're right. In fact, people imagine that there's a superhuman deity out there in the sky that's looking after us. That's very true. The brain is capable of imagining almost anything.
Okay, so that you can know things other than what your five senses tell you.
No, your five senses are the stimuli that come into the brain.
All right, well, we're stuck.
Without a brain.
Dr. Henderson, I think we're stuck.
Okay.
And I think you need a bit more courage. Because you have, in our short conversation, you have refuted yourself. You've contradicted yourself. And you should say, Bob, you know what? Now that we've talked about it, I agree that that's a false statement, that you can only know that which your five senses tell you. Because I know many things that, in fact, my five senses don't tell me.
Well, I would suggest that you're the one that lacks courage.
All right. Let's go to this. That's one of seven. And now let me ask you this one. Atheists will often say there are no absolutes. What is your take on that? Is that true or false?
Well, I think that there may be an occasional absolute But for most of the things are not black or white, but they're in large shades of gray. For example, on homosexuality, I know you're homophobic, so why don't we talk a little about homosexuality? Is that that could be an absolute to you? That's an absolute truth that God doesn't like homosexuals and considers it an abominable sin. But for most other people, that absolute truth doesn't hold water. So I would say only on very rare occasions are there absolute truths that will stand all situations. There are very few truths that will stand to all situations.
Could you give me an example of an absolute truth?
Well, I think the absolute truth that you used with the students, you kept repeating that truth. Do you believe somebody who forcibly rapes a woman against her desire, is that an absolute truth? And I think in that situation that you kept harping on, I think that was an absolute truth.
Now, the students who are a lot younger than you,
oh yeah,
and they've grown up now with a generation or two of intense materialism in America and an atheistic curriculum in our culture, we had a hard time finding any student on the campus who would say it's absolutely wrong for a man to violently rape a woman. Now, Dr. Henderson, I don't know if you've ever seen a video like Nova of dolphins mating, male and female dolphins. It's a pretty brutal scene. It's pretty brutal, and they behave like animals. And, in fact...
Well, they are animals.
They are animals.
And don't forget that humans are animals either.
Okay, so humans are animals, and dolphins are animals, and male dolphins get together and basically gang rape a female dolphin. So then, if we're just animals, why would it be absolutely wrong for us to behave like animals?
Well, because we are animals, so we are going to behave like animals. You can only hope that there will human civilization will allow us to take into other things other than just our basic animal drive of food, comfort, and sex.
Well, that's a value system you have, right?
Right. That's right.
Now, there are others who have different value systems,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So what would make your value system absolutely right and theirs wrong?
Well, I don't say my value system is absolutely right.
Okay. So then if they say we don't care about civilization, we prefer if it feels good, do it, and it feels good to us to rape this woman and then to kill her, and beside we're just animals, there is no God, there is no judgment day, how can you assert that your value system is correct and theirs is false?
Well, each individual has to come up with their own value system, and I think that they do differ from person to person. Just as your value system may be not to allow any woman to have an abortion, while my value system would be to allow a woman to make that choice. So there are going to be different value systems, and each of us are going to come up with our own value system.
Okay, what I'm asking
you... But now let me ask you, let's go back to those dolphins again. That's sort of an interesting situation that I was never aware of, that male dolphins get together and gang rape female dolphins.
Yes.
Now, you don't believe that the lower animal kingdoms have a conscience or a sense of right and wrong, do you?
No.
Okay, then that means that means God created those animals to do that, doesn't it?
God created animals to be animals, plants to be plants, fish can eat other fish,
right?
And it's not immoral, but you have avoided my question. My question to you is, if it's absolutely wrong for a man to violently rape a woman, and you said that, well, that's your value system. If there are other people and they say in our value system, it's fun to forcibly violently rape her and then kill her, how can you assert, how could you demonstrate that your value system is superior and it's the true one and that theirs is false and wrong?
Well, you can only evaluate that based on what is best for the common good.
Well, what if they don't care? That's your value system is that you care about the common good. Their value system is that they don't.
Well, I think then you'd sort of have to have a vote, and I bet you and I would agree totally that that was wrong.
So your value system is that the majority rules?
No, not always.
Well, does the majority define absolute right and wrong?
No.
Of course not.
Nobody defines right
if you
wrong.
So even if you have a vote, you can't get it absolute right and wrong. So that, I think once again, Dr. Henderson, this is what you should say. You should say, Bob, when I told your audience that I believe it's absolutely wrong for a man to violently rape a woman, I say that only because it's my personal value system, and someone else has another value system, and I have no way of showing that mine is right and theirs is wrong.
Well, I think I have a good way of showing that mine is right, because by far the preponderance of opinion would be just as you and I both agree that that is wrong.
No, you just agreed that majority rule does not define absolute right and wrong.
Yeah, that's a different issue.
No, it's the same issue as what we're talking about. So here's the problem, Dr. Henderson. You cannot go to someone who thinks that if it feels good, do it, and show them, you can't demonstrate to them how that is wrong.
And well, I think it certainly can.
Well, how do you do it? I just asked you three times.
Well, for one thing, it may be against the law.
They don't care about the law.
Then they have to be willing to serve the punishment.
They might be the king of their country. It might be Saddam Hussein with his rape rooms and his torture rooms.
Right.
And he doesn't care about your value system. I'm asking you to demonstrate to the audience how it is that your value system is absolutely right and his is absolutely wrong.
Well, I would never demonstrate that because I don't believe that my value system is absolutely right.
So that you misled the audience when you said that a man violently raping a woman is absolutely wrong.
In my opinion.
So that you misled them and you're playing games with words.
No, I'm not playing games.
Yes, you are. Dr. Henderson, you are. If you'd like, Dr. John Henderson, medical doctor, I could keep you on hold and we could continue in the second half.
I'll stand by.
Okay, appreciate
that.
Thank you. We will be back right after this.
At Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or KGOV.com.
This is Bob Inyart inviting you to read our manuscript, The Plot, for an overview of the whole Bible. Call us at 800-836-9278. That's 836-9278. Bob and Yurt Live, our website, KGov, KGOV.com. In 1 minute, we'll get with Dr. John Henderson and continue our debate. But first, as I said earlier, Stephen Hawking is in the news today. In the headline today from, the media around the world, he's giving a talk in Hong Kong. He's speaking at a lecture. The headline is this: Stephen Hawking says, human beings are close to finding answers to the origin of the universe. And I really think they should preface that, and he should come out and say, for all of the millions of you out there, especially you atheists, who thought that we understood the origins of the universe, I have to correct that. We don't. But now I think we're getting close. And what is it does he think they're getting close to? I'll quote him. He says he spoke at the Hong Kong University of Science and Technology today, and he said, quote, we do not yet have good theoretical understanding of the expansion of the universe. and the expansion of the universe, that's pretty much the story of the Big Bang. That's pretty much the story of the Big Bang, the expansion of the universe. It's like, well, we figured it all out, but we don't quite get the expansion of the universe part. We do not yet have a good theoretical understanding of the expansion of the universe. For all those millions of you who thought that the Big Bang was solid, that they really figured it out, they haven't really figured it out. It's a desperate, blind faith that they have to explain how the universe has come here from nothing. Okay, now we're going to go back to Dr. John Henderson, medical doctor with a military career. And I'd like to start with a question to Dr. Henderson. And Dr. Henderson, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Dr. Henderson, I asked you if you believed in absolute right and wrong, and you said, yes, Bob, like on your video, Get Out of the Matrix, you believe that a violent rape is absolutely wrong. And, of course, with the social pressure of an audience listening, that's the politically correct answer that an atheist always gives. They say, yes, violent rape is absolutely wrong. But then under cross-examination, you equivocate it, Dr. Henderson. You admit it that the majority opinion does not define absolute right and wrong. You admitted that. And you also admitted that each of us will come up with his own value system. And when I asked you again about rape and some people thinking if it feels good, do it, you said, well, this is my opinion, and they come up with their own value system. So I'd like to ask you again to give a more consistent answer. Is the violent rape of a woman absolutely wrong?
I think in our present society, it would almost everyone would consider it an absolute wrong.
I'm not asking if almost everyone would, and I'm not asking about our present society. I'm saying, is it absolutely wrong for a man? I'm not saying what people consider it. Like, you agree that some people, if it feels good, do it. They would enjoy raping women and then killing them. Some people enjoy it, and they do it.
That doesn't make it right.
Well, I'm asking you to demonstrate for the audience, how could you assert that your value system is correct and their value system is false?
Well, because all value systems, including morality, are man-made. I know you believe that God created morality, but in reality, man has created his own morality.
All right, Dr. Henderson, just to clarify, I don't believe that God created morality, I'm asking you, we're testing your belief system right now, and I'm trying to get a more consistent answer out of you. You just said that at the present time, most people would agree with this preference that it's wrong to rape a woman. So I would like you to give a more honest answer. It takes courage. That's why I keep using this word. It takes courage to say, you know what? I don't believe it's absolutely wrong for a man to violently rape a woman. I just don't prefer it in my value system.
No, in the parameters that you are asking the question, it is absolutely wrong for a man to rape a woman.
Yeah, is it?
Yes.
Okay, and so the person who thinks it's fun, and then he kills her afterward.
That's wrong.
Okay, now how can you establish that your value system is correct and his is wrong?
I can't.
Okay, thank you. There's a piece of honesty. All right, so here's what you should say, and it takes courage. You should say, I do not believe it's absolutely wrong for a man to violently rape a woman. In my preference, I'm against it.
No, I can't say that at all, because I do believe it's absolutely wrong.
But you can't establish it.
But I can't prove it.
You can't establish it. I'm asking
right.
you for a groping in the dark.
Yep.
The only thing you've offered is that the majority would agree with you.
That's exactly right.
But you agree.
According to the present social mores,
but Dr. Henderson,
doing that is wrong.
But you agree that majority rule does not determine absolute right and wrong.
Oh, that's right.
Right. So that evidence that you offer, you admit, is invalid.
Well,
so you have no rational evidence. Here's why you do this. You want atheism to look good to unsuspecting people. And you want them to think that with an atheistic foundation, you can still have a strong foundation for morality. But you can't even defend that raping a woman. How about the slaughter of 6 million Jewish men, women, and children? Was that absolutely wrong?
That was absolutely wrong, and if there were a God, he would have done something about it.
Let's deal with that second question next. First, for those who believe that Jews should be murdered because they believe in survival of the fittest and that we're just animals and the stronger animals can kill and use the weaker animals, then how can you assert, how can you defend that your value system is right and their value system is wrong?
I'm not defending that my value system is right.
Well, you said that killing the Jews was absolutely wrong.
In my opinion.
And obviously, so.
But apparently God didn't think it was absolutely wrong, or else he sat on his ass and did nothing about it.
Dr. Henderson, if you're crude again in your language, I'll hang up on you. And I told you we'll get to that next. So first, you just admitted in your own opinion they shouldn't have murdered 6 million men, women, and children, but you cannot defend, after a lifetime, an educated lifetime, of thinking through atheism and human interaction, you could not defend that the slaughter of 6 million men, women, and children was absolutely wrong. It's just, in your opinion, something you don't prefer.
I can defend it. I think I can defend. I think most people would agree, including yourself.
You just admitted
that is absolutely wrong.
You just admitted that majority opinion doesn't define absolute right and wrong.
That's exactly right.
So don't use that as evidence to claim your to make your point.
That's the only evidence that we have.
But you say that that evidence is invalid. So the only evidence you could bring. Making the claim that the Holocaust was absolutely wrong, by your own admission, is invalid. And that's because you're trying to build a house on a broken foundation. If there's only materialism, we're just atoms and molecules, well, if some atoms happen to smash into others, there's no right or wrong. It's just matter. And if we are only matter, if there's no morality that we must answer to, no truth and justice that we're accountable to, then if some people eat other people because they think it's entertaining to kill and slaughter children and eat them, it's not wrong. It's just atoms and molecules rearranging themselves in different ways.
I think you brought up a good point on cannibalism and morality, because for certain groups, eating human flesh was not immoral. It was part of their culture.
Yeah, and for other groups, raping women is not wrong, and killing Jews is not wrong, and owning blacks is not wrong, so that what we should be able to do as human beings is to assess the views of cultures and say, when the Aztec culture thought it was okay to take virgin young women and kill them and skin them, that was immoral, it was wrong.
What we have to do as human beings is establish a morality for humans. We have to establish it by humans, for humans, and realize that God neither establishes morality nor does he enforce the morality that some people think he is for.
Okay, I'll get to that. It's your second argument on this issue, and it's basically the argument of evil, that since there's so much evil in the world, like the Holocaust, you said that basically proves that there is no good God,
right?
Because why would he allow all that?
Exactly.
The argument of evil. So you accept that argument?
Yes.
So the reason that you are accustomed to using concludes for you that because the evil like the Holocaust and other evils are in the world, there cannot be a good God.
Right.
Okay.
That's one of the reasons.
Okay.
There are many other reasons.
Okay, that's one. That's one. Now, there are two unstated assumptions in that argument. Okay. You might be able to identify others, but I can give you two unstated assumptions in your argument of evil. One is that love can be forced. You're assuming that God could have made human beings in such a way that they would only be nice to each other. They would only love each other.
I am assuming that.
And that's a false assumption, because love has to be freely given. To be human means we have a will. We have a will, and our will is the ability to decide otherwise. So God says, love your neighbor, and someone could say, no, I'm Al-Qaeda. I hate my neighbor. And so you're assuming, without telling the audience, that love can be forced. And then there's a second assumption. And the second assumption on the argument of evil is that some love is not worth enduring much hate. And I would disagree with you on that also. I have a love relationship with my Creator God, with my wife and my children. And even though the world is filled with hate and wickedness, the love that I have in those relationships is worth existing in a hate-filled world.
Bob, I wouldn't be debating on this issue at all if it weren't for the tremendous harm that organized religion is causing in the world today. In fact, I have written two books discussing that harm, and they're available at Amazon and all the bookstores. And one of them is God.com, A Deity for the New Millennium. And the other is Fear, Faith, Fact, Fantasy. And I would bet that if you were to read those books, you would agree with me in many, many respects. The only thing that you would say would be, well, that's not my God. That's not my God that let the devil loose, or it's not, or you would have all of these excuses of why your God did certain things.
Well, Dr. Henderson, it's best to speak with specifics, I think, because I understand that you look at the history of the world and you use the argument from evil, and you say
that's one of the arguments. And,
right, but you use that argument with your reasoning, and you conclude that a good God cannot exist because of all the evil in the world.
Right.
But I've just identified two. In your book, did you list those two unstated assumptions? Did you list that love cannot be forced?
No, I didn't.
No, and did you list the second assumption that some love is worth enduring much hate?
No.
Okay, so
I didn't put it in those words.
Well, and you know what? You need to think through those issues, and you need to be honest with your readers and say, when I'm using evil as proof that there's no God, understand my assumption that love could be forced.
Well, let's go back to the beginning. How about explaining to me why God created Lucifer and then let him loose as the devil? Maybe you can explain to me.
Sure.
I've never understood that.
I could. It's very similar to how God created Adam and Eve. He created them innocent, but with a will. And he encouraged them to love one another. They rebelled against God, and they chose to hate.
But if he's all-knowing, then he knew that before he created them, didn't he?
Well, that's another issue, but let's stick with Adam and Eve first and Lucifer. In Lucifer, God made Lucifer innocent and with a will, and he encouraged Lucifer to fellowship with God and the other angels and with Adam and Eve. And Lucifer used the will that God gave him, because love cannot be forced, and Lucifer rebelled against God.
Well, I would say God messed up in the beginning.
That's because of your second unstated assumption. You are saying that some love is not worth enduring much hate. And the love that I enjoy with my wife Cheryl and our seven boys and our God, that love that we enjoy is worth enduring a world filled with people who hate God.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth it. Would you agree that some love is worth enduring much hate?
Oh, yes.
And would you agree?
Love is worth dying for.
And would you agree that love cannot be forced?
I would agree with that.
Okay, those two agreements you've just made undo the argument of evil.
Well, I don't think it does, not in my mind.
Dr. Henderson, you've never thought through those two issues before and how they relate to the argument of evil.
I've thought through them ever since the third grade. That's the reason I decided to write at my age. Couple of books discussing them.
Dr. Henderson, if you, in fact, had thought through how love has to be freely given and some love is worth enduring much hate, if you actually had thought through that regarding the argument of evil and you left it out of your book, that would have been an injustice. You'd have been intentionally deceiving your readers, and I don't believe you did that. I don't believe you did that. I think you haven't thought through the argument of evil with a critical, rational, clear mind. Because if you had, you would conclude on your own that love cannot be forced, and some love is worth enduring much evil, so therefore there could be a God of love even in a world that is filled with hatred.
Well, now, I won't argue if you want to define God as love.
No, I'm not defining him as love.
I can't argue.
No. That would be meaningless, right?
Yeah.
It is.
You're exactly right. It's meaningless.
Yeah, it is.
But a God who does, I assume that you have read the Bible.
Yes.
And I assume that you believe in the inerrancy of the Bible.
Well, in the original autographs, which is...
In Aramaic?
Well, the Bible was written in Hebrew and the New Testament in Greek. And we do not believe, though, Christianity doesn't assert that the scribes who copied the Bible for thousands of years were inerrant and miraculous.
As far as the King James Bible, you don't necessarily believe everything it says.
Well, the Bible, I'll give you an example. I'll answer with an example. The Dead Sea Scrolls were found in the last century. And the book of Isaiah, a lengthy book, is in its entirety in the Dead Sea Scrolls, dated from before Christ. And it is identical, word for word, letter for letter, with the Hebrew book of Isaiah in Hebrew Bibles today. So for 2,000 years, the text was preserved carefully. Now, but we do not claim that God did miracles when the Bibles translated from Hebrew and Greek to English, nor when scribes copied them. It's just that scribes did an extraordinary job carefully recording the Bible for future generations. So that, and the Bible's a very thick book. And when God wrote the DNA of a human being, he did it in 3 billion base pairs of amino acids. So that if you have a child, even if there's a genetic mutation and it's not a perfect replica, it's still a human being. It's still a child. And the same thing with the Bible. The Bible is so thick and there's enough error-correcting redundancy in it that if you want to know God and you read about his word, you'll find out that he made us. He put a conscience in us so that we know right from wrong. And even if we reject him, our conscience condemns us.
So you really believe that God killed everybody back there with Noah at the time of the flood?
Yeah, that's right. And the people who hated God, they got their opportunity to go on to the afterlife and live without him. And people who loved God at the time, and children, babies, whoever, they got the opportunity to go into the afterlife and be with him. And to us, when we die, that marks this major divide between our earthly existence and the afterlife. But God has made us to live here on earth and then forever in the afterlife. And so God, being our creator, if he chooses to bring us to the afterlife, he's not being immoral by doing so.
Now, what happens? What's your concept of hell?
Hell is where people who don't love God get to live apart from him.
Are they going to burn and suffer for eternity?
Well, I believe they will suffer, because if you rebel against God, then you end up with yourself as God, and that's a terrible suffering. But as far as fire and brimstone and whips and lashes, I believe that hell is a real, literal place, but those are figures of speech to communicate how miserable an existence apart from your Creator.
Well, I've been apart from my Creator all my life, and I haven't had a miserable existence.
Well, God's mercy is, he abounds in mercy and grace.
Well, then he ought to have mercy after I die, don't you think?
He's going to give you your wish. By the end of your life, you've determined, I do not want to live with my Creator. And love cannot be forced, and God will not force himself on you. And you might say this, Dr. Henderson, you might say, well, after I die and I find out, hey, there really is a God, if he's any good, he's going to let me live wherever I want to live.
But, yeah, that's a good logical conclusion.
But the problem with that is that then when we all go to heaven, there's no motivation for people to not hate one another again and steal and hurt and murder and torment. Because no matter how evil we are, no matter how much we reject God, he's going to forgive us and be merciful. And so that kind of unmerited mercy and eternal patience ends up destroying people. There has to be boundaries. And God has given us these boundaries of our earthly life.
So your concept is that no matter how bad you've been all of your life, you've done all those terrible things like raping women against their desire, as long as they come to Jesus Christ in the end and say, I'm sorry, they're going to be right up there with God, right?
Yes. The only thing God needs to be able to work with you, Dr. Henderson, is for you to say to God humbly, God, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what I've done to hurt others and to turn my back on you. Please forgive me. And if you will do that, God can work with you. If you will not do that, he cannot force you to love him or love your neighbor?
Yeah, well, no, I can't do that, because when I look at God in the eye, I'm going to explain to him what a terrible job he's doing, how poorly he is communicating with people, and how he has allowed 10,000 different gods to work in our society today.
And are you going to explain to him that because of the argument of evil, he must be evil?
Right, I would.
Because of all the hatred in the world, he must be evil.
Right. He should have done a better job creating the universe.
And then he's going to remind you of this interview. And he's going to say, Dr. Henderson, didn't you agree that love cannot be forced?
Well, he's not. I agree. Love can't be forced.
And he's going to ask you, didn't you agree? And you're going to say, yes, I agree. And then he's going to say, didn't you agree that some love is worth enduring much hatred?
Oh, yes.
And you're going to say, yes, I agree. And he's going to say, Dr. Henderson, I'm your creator. I made this world. I've shown my love by creating you. I've urged you to live for me, not against me. And you rebelled, and you used that rebellion as an excuse to hate me.
Well, I would go on learning, and I'd say, oh, by the way, God, who created you?
And the answer is that God is eternal.
He's eternal. He's always been.
Right.
So if he has always been, then the universe can always have been.
Dr. Henderson, last time you were on, we talked through that at length. Do you remember the logical fallacy in that reasoning?
I remembered your illogical fallacy.
Do you remember what I said?
Yes.
What was my argument?
Your argument was that the universe couldn't have endured. It had to be created, and that argument was basically based upon your ignorance of the universe and of physics.
What was my argument as to why it's inconsistent to say God needed a beginning if the universe needed a beginning? What was my argument?
That I don't remember.
Okay.
Now you're going to tell me.
I will. You want me to, don't you, Dr. Henderson?
Yeah.
Okay. And Dr. Henderson, I plead with you now. Your memory and your reasoning abilities are getting weaker.
Well, I'm 83 years old, so maybe I'm losing it.
Well, I'm losing it too, and I'm 47, but you are trusting in those faculties with your rebellion against your maker.
All I have is my reason and my logic.
Well, your humility also could come into play. Dr. Henderson, here it is. The universe is a physical entity. Therefore, it cannot violate the laws of physics. Therefore, it could not have been eternal, because all the energy would reach a high point of entropy and the universe would be cold and dark and dead by now. The universe, being physical, could not have always been here. God is a supernatural creator, a spiritual creator. The laws of physics don't apply to a spiritual being, so that argument is inherently illogical.
Well, I can only disagree. We can only agree to disagree.
No, that's not true. I can offer logical reason, and you fail to substantiate your fundamental beliefs.
And I would say that 97% of the physicists and the mathematicians would not agree with you.
And on Judgment Day, we'll get to hear from them directly. Thank you, Dr. John Henderson, for your time.
Thank you, Bob.
I do appreciate your time. And those in the audience, please pray for the doc. And tune in tomorrow, Lord willing. We'll be here. We'll enjoy another show together. God bless you.